Welcome to the Oh Woman podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. This is episode 38 of the Oh Woman podcast show. I want to welcome my friend Jen back to the show again with her daughter Hattie, who was 10 months old yesterday. Welcome, Jen. Thanks for coming.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yes, it was very fun. She's one of my best friends, so it's really great to get to talk to her about her experiences. So the episode today, we're going to talk about the beginning of labor, the latent stage of labor. So in previous episodes, we talked about creating a birth plan, we talked about pregnancy experiences, and now we're moving ahead to the big event, which is the beginning of actually the birth of her daughter. So the first question, or not really the first question, but the first thing we need to kind of talk about is the decision that Jen made to have her baby in a birth center, and she chose a place that had midwives as opposed to doctors, and there are midwife nurses. Why, this is just kind of an overview, we already, you know, kind of talked about it in previous episodes, but why did you choose that place instead of another place like a hospital?
I chose the birth center because I felt like they were on board with all of the things that I wanted to happen during my labor and birth, which, you know, I didn't want an epidural. I wanted to do it naturally as much as possible because of all the dangers of an epidural. Not, you know, the least of which is having paralysis for the rest of your life. And I just felt like it wasn't worth that to just not feel contractions, you know. I wanted to experience the birth process. And
did I actually tell you that one of my friends spoke to a nurse about how it was actually a nurse that she saw in a doctor's office who was working in the doctor's office at the time, and was talking to her about how the nurse had had an epidural and Jen had had natural birth, and the nurse was like, I wish I'd done it naturally. I have permanent, like, I cannot feel my left leg. It is tingly and numb, and if I put all my weight on it, I would fall over. Like, and this is someone that she actually met and talked to. It's not like just a story you read about.
Right.
Who was a nurse and thought, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I'd done it naturally.
Right. I mean, it's more common than you would expect for people to have problems, or they'll have, like, you know, pain in their back at the site of the epidural needle where it goes in. I mean,
it goes like next to in your spine. It is like right there.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I did a lot of research on it, and there, it's kind of shocking how it's actually done. But anyway, I wanted a place where that wasn't even an option. They don't even have those there. So I didn't have to worry about it unless I were to have like a hospital transfer or something went wrong, then there would be the option of it. But, I chose a birth center because I wanted to be in a comfortable environment, and their birthing rooms, you know, have a big bed, and, you know, you can move around. There's a water, a tub that you can birth in. I wanted to have the option of that, because it can, you know, just help you cope with, the struggle of the labor. And, I felt like there'd be less chance of having some, you know, the hospital's full of people that are sick, and I didn't feel like pregnancy is not a sickness. It's a natural process, and I felt like I could have a natural delivery also. Those were my main reasons. Yeah, and I knew that if I did have a problem, that there was a hospital minutes away that I could get to very quickly.
And they had a really great plan at the birth center, like that, you know, they knew what to do. They weren't just going to sit there and go, oh, emergency, we'll sit here and panic. They knew as soon as this happens, we call this person, we get you to the hospital. It's great.
Like, right, they actually do drills, like monthly, to make sure that they can do it under a certain amount of time and that they know exactly what to do in case of an emergency. So that made me feel really confident that I was choosing the right place.
Yeah.
Because I think if not for that and the ability to get help, emergency help if needed, I would probably want to do it at a hospital or somewhere within a hospital.
Especially because it was your first baby, so you don't know what to expect.
Right, right.
So I know you did a lot of research looking into what would be the best choice, and you chose the birth center, and you chose to do it with midwives, and you chose to do a natural birth. How did the research that you did and the midwives and people that you talked to prepare you for actually labor, like the beginning of labor, what to expect, how it felt, when you should start to get a move on to the birth center, when you should panic, if at all? Like, how did that inform your knowledge of that time?
You mean, like, what did people, like, the midwives?
Like, yeah, like, how did they give you enough information so that you knew, okay, labor started, this is real, okay, it's amping up now. Or your research, even, like, from what you researched, how did you figure out when would be, just how did you begin to understand the timeline of labor from what you learned and what people told you and what to expect?
Okay, right, right. You know, I had done so much reading on my own that I didn't really ask a whole lot of questions at my appointments toward the end, except, you know, I would say, in this instance, like, what if I go into labor and my baby is not in the correct position? Like, what happens then? And, I don't know, my midwives, I guess they probably could tell that I was pretty informed, and so I got most of my information just from my own reading, but, you know, toward the end of your pregnancy, you want to make sure that the baby is, like, head down and facing a certain direction, and it's, like, the ideal position for labor. You know, several weeks before the end of my pregnancy, Hattie was not in, she was transverse, which means her head was not down. She was kind of sideways in there, and so that was a little bit of a concern. And, you know, I started to read a lot about the baby's positioning and how that might affect labor and how long it takes, and all that. And I learned a lot that, you know, the baby's position has a huge effect on how long labor takes and how it feels. Like, if the baby's malpositioned, you might have back labor, which is, like, you know, intense pressure in your back, which is, I would think most women would find it more difficult to deal with than just normal contractions. And there are exercises you can do to change your baby's position and things you can do actually during labor to deal with different types of positioning of the baby. And, you know, sometimes you can go into labor and it stalls because the baby's not in the right position. And you can have what's called prodromal labor, which means, you know, you'll have actual real contractions, not just Braxton Hicks, which are, you know, just kind of practice contractions. Your body's not actually trying to get the baby out. It's just sort of tightening and loosening, and it's not real painful. It's not painful at all. But you feel pressure. But anyway, you can have real contractions for days before you have the baby, and it's nothing to really be concerned about unless there's a problem. But if you're being monitored, you know, you're keeping a close eye on everything, you can have a pretty long early labor. It can last for days. And I think most
did.
Right. Yeah. It lasted I had 2 days, 48 hours of, well, I guess even more than that when you count the actual day. But, I went into labor, should I keep going?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure how much you wanted me to say, but,
Oh yeah, I want you to tell me as much as you want to share. Cause I remember you thinking, calling me cause I was going to be at the birth and saying, okay, we think we're probably going to go in sooner. It should be today because the contractions were starting to get a little bit more frequent and then they slowed down for a whole day and it wasn't a problem, but you were like, man, come on. But it was just your body not ready yet. It was waiting.
Right. I was at, I went 11 days past the due date. So I think on like the 8th or 9th day, you know, I started having real contractions one night and like, you know, it felt like really strong period cramps really. And it was like every 20 minutes. And, you know, I tried to just, I couldn't really sleep. So I just laid in bed and just thought, well, I guess this is starting. I'm just going to relax because I know this can take forever and I don't want to like go too early, you know, because then they're just going to send you home. And you're not
in wake your husband up at that point.
No, I didn't even wake him up.
Waiting to see.
Yeah, I just kind of lay in bed for a few hours, and then they started to get more intense, and so I got up and I watched Dances with Wolves, the movie, and like would labor, you know, like get off the couch and like squat in between, you know, when I was having contractions, and that went on all night. I was up all night until probably 7, 8, or 9 the next morning, and they just sort of eased up and weren't as painful, and I could still feel them, and I could, you know, they were a little painful, but weren't. I could just go about my business. And so that happened for the whole day. And then the following night, I started having contractions again around like 1 a.m. in the morning. And I was up the whole night again, laboring. And I didn't wake up my husband again that night because I was like, well, this is going to take a while.
Yeah.
And those got more intense. And then they lessened up again in the morning for the whole next day. And it was getting stressful at that point because
you also were missing sleep because of it. And you were worried that you wouldn't have enough energy during actual, like, you know, active labor stage to be as strong and stuff.
Right. And I was getting concerned at that point. I knew that the baby was probably fine, but, you know, I'd asked my midwives questions like, you know, what if the umbilical cord is around the baby's neck? Because that's what happened to my mom, and I ended up having to be born via C-section. And so I was concerned, like, what if that happens? Like, how will I know? You know, what should I look for? What if the baby's in the wrong position? You know, and apparently, like, many babies are born with their umbilical cord around their neck.
I thought it was about 1/3 of them, and it's rarely an issue.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't know that. But, you know, and sometimes the babies just aren't in the perfect position. And my midwife told me, you know, do these particular exercises, like squat, hold on to the handles of your door and squat down, do as many squats as you can handle. And I was like, well, what do you mean, how many? And she was like, until your legs are sore, like, just do a lot, like, throughout the day. You know, have sex, like, try evening primrose oil, which is like, has prostaglandins in it that help your cervix dilate, and you can, like, shove those, like, pills up into your vagina.
Oh, really?
And you can take them orally, and I was doing that, and you're supposed to have sex because semen has prostaglandins also that help the cervix dilate, it's not just like jostling around, but it's actually like there's a chemical process of like the semen being there that helps you dilate.
There's a reason, after all.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, all the science of it's so fascinating. It was 3 days, I guess, of labor, but it didn't, you know, when people say, oh my God, I had a 3-day labor. I mean, it sounds terrible, but it was actually really nice to have a break. Like, I was mentally prepared. I was like, this is it. I'm ready. We're doing this. And then I would get a break and be like, okay, am I really ready? Like, what else can I do? Like, maybe I should do this or that. Or
should I wash some clothes to get ready? You know,
yeah.
Whatever.
It was nice. It was nice to be able to mentally and physically prepare, to have a little extra time. I'm kind of a late sort of person anyway. So I was like, more time. All right. this is fine.
So then that actually leads me into the next question I wanted to ask you, which is how you felt actually when you realized, okay, this is it. Like, labor is starting now. It was drawn out, like you said, but I'm sure you were excited, but how nervous were you? Were you thinking, I'm not ready. Give me more time. Or were you like, okay, come on, let's go. What were you thinking? And did it change throughout the course of the day or two?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think around 38 weeks pregnant, I was like feeling like, okay, this could happen anytime. I feel ready, but not quite. I think emotionally I needed some time to really get ready. And you know, when I went past the due date, I was just reading birth stories all day. I was walking, I was, you know, trying to have lunch with people and like do some social things, straightening up the house, organizing the house, and just mentally preparing. Like, and I don't think I was quite emotionally ready until the very end. I didn't feel like I was completely emotionally ready until like the very moment I had the baby, I suppose. And I don't know if that's just my personality. I kind of like to wait till the last minute for things. but it really felt that way. Like, I had some, like, you know, personal family issues going on. Like, you know, one of my family members was, like, hospitalized for a suicide attempt. And he had just come out of the hospital. And I wanted him to be able to meet my baby. And, you know, just having gone through the trauma of that, it was really stressful and scary. I, you know, needed to know he was okay, I feel like, and my other family members that were helping him were okay before I was able to, like, relax and have my baby, because I wanted all of their support and I wanted them to be there. And I think that maybe had something to do with it. And also, there was a big snowstorm. Like, I was starting to feel really ready. I was like totally ready, and then the snowstorm hit, like the biggest one we had in ages.
It was like 10 or 12 inches, I believe, right?
It was crazy. Yeah. And so the birth center was shut down, and so I knew that if I wanted to labor, I'd have to go to the hospital, and we would actually probably have to walk to the hospital, which is only, you know, it'd be like a 10-minute walk on a nice day. It would probably take me an hour if I were in labor.
Well, and there were, none of the streets were cleared out, and it was a snowy, icy mix is what it was. And the birth center was on a kind of a rural off-road, and so nobody could get there. The ambulance theoretically couldn't get there if you had an emergency, so that's why they weren't open, right?
Right. Like, we could have theoretically gotten there, but because in an emergency, they wouldn't have been able to get there in a timely manner. Like, the ambulance, if there was something wrong, they decided to close up shop. And they said they could help us at the nearby hospital, which is, you know, that was an option with the birth center. You could have your baby in the hospital and have the midwives there.
But that's a really great option for people that are worried about having it just at a birth center.
Right, yeah. Right. And that was, you know, a good option, I felt like. But, you know, we would still have to drive a long way to get to that hospital since it wasn't right down the street. So, you know, I would just lay on the couch all day. At that point, I was, like, not walking or doing anything to
labor
after having, you know, been walking and you know, doing all these things, I like put a hold on that and just like camped out on the couch for 2 whole days and felt like a slug and it was terrible. But,
well, maybe it worked because you didn't have her during the snowy time.
No, and I feel like I could have easily. Like I went out walking in the snow for a few minutes and I could feel my Braxton Hicks getting stronger and stronger because I was like having to make an effort, like lifting my legs, like walking around in the snow. And I was like, okay, going back inside. So, I mean, I felt like it could have happened anytime I wanted it to, almost like, you know, it, not really. Like, I'm sure at the time I was like, when is this going to happen? I'm doing everything I can to make it happen. But I felt like, you know, maybe I could have gone into labor earlier if I'd really, really been ready, if there hadn't been that snowstorm, if, like, I didn't have those stressful family events happening, you know.
That's really interesting. That, yeah.
I think there's definitely a psychological component to it.
Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah. Because I know one thing in that the book that's, what is the book called? The one by Ina May Gaskin.
The Guide to Childbirth Ina May Gaskin.
The Guide to Childbirth by Ina May Gaskin. And there'll be a link to that in the resources section of the A Woman Podcast page, so check it out there. But that she had talked about how something, or that it says, talks about how the mind and the body are so connected, and that, especially considering that the area where the baby's coming from is just a huge system of muscles that are related to your psychological state, your tension, how you hold stress in your body. So if you're not, you know, prepared, or you are prepared, you're more relaxed, you know, it could really connect to if it's actually time, you know. It's not just about the baby's timing. I mean, it really, you know, the baby's going to come out when it's ready, but it has a lot to do with your timing and how they align with the baby, you know, actually it being the right time for both of you, really. So I also wanted to ask you about, talk more about a little bit about the concept of a late baby. Like, she's overdue. You know, it makes it sound like she's spoiled and we have to toss her in the trash or something. You know, so it sounds like, oh, the yogurt is overdue. It has expired. Let's throw it away. You know, but that's clearly not what it is with babies. And, so, you know, a due date is almost an arbitrary date, really, because they base it off of what, the first day of your missed period or something, right? You can explain that in a minute. I don't know that much about it, but that an early baby or a late baby, I mean, there's really a range that you should be expecting to have your baby in, and just about, you know, you shouldn't be pressured to undergo an intervention in having your baby, or let's induce, you're a day overdue. You're not overdue because it's not time yet. You know, it's not really a calendar thing. So how did you feel knowing she was 11 days overdue? Were you completely stressed out? I don't think you were, because you knew that it was okay.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, some friends of mine that have had babies that I feel like are a little less educated about all of that, like they would text me or ask me, like, you're a week overdue, like, are you about to go crazy? You know, are you worried? Like, you know, people would, like, I went to a body pump class, which is like a workout class at the YMCA, and people were looking at me like I was crazy because I had this huge belly, you know, I was overdue. And or, you know, I, because, you know, people think, oh my god, you could just like plop the baby out any second, like it's just gonna fall out, right, if you're lifting weights. But anyway, like the term overdue, it's, you know, it's really your individual body that, and your baby that determine when the baby's going to be born. And, you know, there is a point at which there can be problems. Like if you stay pregnant for too long, it could indicate that something is wrong with your baby. Like that makes sense. And if you have your baby too early, same thing, like this indicates something is wrong with your baby. But for a normal healthy pregnancy, until you go to 42 weeks, there's actually no, there's studies, you know, it's after 42 weeks that your chance of having a stillbirth rise. So until then, I would say that maybe you're overdue around 42 weeks would be the proper term. But so many,
I think
it's just like our culture these days, like doctors these days, like, you know, they want to be able to plan a birth. They're, you know, induction is great because they can start it at this time and then know, you know.
And they get home for dinner, which is more important than the birth of your baby, it seems.
Right. You know, I mean, it's just more convenient. I mean, it makes sense, I guess, if you're a doctor, like it would be more convenient, you know, to have someone on a schedule. But it's really not based on science.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it is at all. And I know that you went in to the birth center for another checkup after you were, quote unquote, overdue by a few days, because they wanted to make sure that your placenta wasn't starting to deteriorate, so that right. the baby wasn't losing nutrients, and they checked you, and you were fine, which means the placenta was intact, the baby was still growing and healthy, and she just wasn't ready, you weren't ready, it wasn't the time yet.
Right. You know, if you can monitor it, you know, make sure they do like a non-stress test and listen to the baby's heart rate, make sure the baby's heart rate is normal, that they're moving appropriately. They can do an ultrasound and look at the placenta, make sure it's not like calcifying, because that means that it might not be delivering nutrients well to the baby, that it's like aging past, you know, when it needs to be. And also checking for amniotic fluid to make sure the baby has enough, or if there's too much, that can indicate a problem. So, you know, as long as they're monitoring those things, they, you know, they were not concerned. My midwives were like, baby looks great. You know, I said, well, how long will you let me go? Because, you know, you know, people will say, well, my doctor won't let me go past 40 weeks. And it's like, well, you can go as long as you want, you know.
It's your body.
Right. And the midwives were just not concerned. There was a lady in there getting a non-stress test done the same time as me whose baby was still in, and she was 42 and a half weeks. So, and she looked great. You know, the baby was great. So they didn't worry. And I really appreciated that. They were pretty hands off and let me guide them. And the health of my baby was like the main concern.
And making sure that you knew the information, what you needed to know, and that you also, they weren't stressing you out by saying, right. if you go to this many weeks, we need to induce, we need to do this, we need to do that, which gives you an anxiety about, oh my God, I have a timeline, let me follow it, which is not what your body is going to be trying to do. Your
right.
body doesn't want to follow that.
Yeah, and I think it's sad that a lot of doctors push women to induce too early, like right on their due date. Like most first-time mothers I read, they're, you know, they've done studies, and most first-time mothers go at least to 41 weeks. I mean, that's the majority. That's the average. Yeah. And so why would you expect a baby to be born at exactly 40 weeks if only, you know, 50% of mothers have their baby before 41 weeks and 50% have after 41 weeks? Like, that just doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't at all.
Why
it
not
seems like it's
mom?
A convenient thing, like you said.
Yeah, because it's going to be less trauma for the mother's body to have it naturally dilate and all, and it's less trauma for the baby to be ready. Maybe the baby's not in the perfect position. Maybe the baby needs a couple days. Maybe you need to move around, you know, to get the baby in the perfect position for labor, you know, and you don't want to rush the baby, because if it's not in the perfect position, then you might be, you know, heading for a C-section with a problem, when if you just waited a few more days, that the baby could have, you could have, you know, had it naturally and been okay.
Yeah, with the C-section being a major abdominal surgery, a lot of people think it's kind of like, oh, you know, let's just, I'll do that instead of having a vaginal birth. But a lot of people don't realize it is a major abdominal surgery. You have to sit still, and you have stitches, and you have staples in your stomach, and you can't move, which is really going to affect your ability to take care of your baby in the beginning.
And you have all kinds of painkillers that might affect, like, you know, your body's ability to make milk and getting that breastfeeding relationship started. You're not able to move very well. Like, it's just, there's a chance of infection. Like, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong with a C-section. And, you know, healing from vaginal delivery, like, there are things that can go wrong. You might need stitches and, you know, sometimes more complicated tears and all. But, you know, it's not more complicated than healing from a C-section.
Yeah, which is cutting open your gut area and going in.
Right. And you do heal. You know, it takes some time, but it's not something to be scared of. Like, you know, I know that going into the birth experience, like, I was very concerned about tearing and what that would feel like and what that's like and trying to prevent that. But, you know, I did have, like, a first-degree tear, and it wasn't a huge problem. It's like,
you got, like, two stitches, and you had some rug burn, or it looked like rug burn. I got to see it, everybody. And that was it, and you didn't even notice. You were like, oh, my baby! You were like, whatever.
Yeah, it was an afterthought. Like, when you're pushing the baby's head out, it's like, you're about to meet your baby. Like, that is the coolest thing. Yep, there's a little tear. Okay, whoa, there's the baby! Like, you know, it just was so not a big deal. And I think it's just, you know, you're just not able to comprehend how amazing that moment is of, like, meeting your baby for the first time. Like, I know it sounds amazing, but you don't really understand until you're there, and how a tear is just not, it's not important at that point. And it does take a while to, you know, heal and all, but it's like, you know, you expect that. It's okay.
Yeah, it's a natural kind of thing. So speaking of, you know, like, tearing and having pain associated with that, I wanted to ask you about how the beginning of the contractions, you know, the first phase of labor before the contractions became a lot more intense before you became dilated. Because there's some discussion about really what are the phases of labor. Like, the Europeans think differently about the phases of labor than Americans. You know, there's There's the active phase of labor, which I think in the U.S. they say it's your dilated 4 centimeters or something like that, and the contractions are a certain amount of minutes apart, but it's different in different countries what they think. So what do the contractions feel like, you know, from the beginning until you got to the stage where you were like, whoa, okay, I really need to, like, really focus here and get people to stop talking to me and get my clothes off and start rolling around and moving around. You know, like, what was it like in the beginning? Like, was it just like period cramps, or did they feel more extreme, pretty quickly? What was that like?
Yeah. Well, those first few days where I'd have like real contractions all night, I mean, it was starting to get uncomfortable. Like, you know, period cramps and getting a little more intense than that. And then when I knew that it was like, this is happening, it was when, you know, obviously they're getting closer together, but it was getting more intense. Like, I wasn't able to talk through them. Like, I had to just lean over and get in some sort of position and just, like, relax, try to relax. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. I wanted to be, like, just me and my husband. Like, it was extremely important to me that I not have anybody watching me for some reason. Like, I kind of had a feeling it would be like that, but I felt like I needed to be away. Like,
and be focused on with yourself.
Yes. Like, I didn't want anything distracting me. Like, I, you know, wanted some relaxing music turned on. I wanted my husband there to, like, push on my back. I needed him there. Like, for every contraction, I'd be like, it's happening.
Come back over. You'd have to run across the room. Yeah.
And he'd, like, assume his position, like, pushing on a different part of my back. And it was funny because it would change, like, between contractions. Like, you know, one contraction, I want him pushing on, like, one part of my back, and the next one, I need, like, an inch to the right and up one a little bit. And I would, like, tell him where I needed him to push.
Yeah.
And it was just really, it was interesting.
And your water broke kind of during that time, during that phase in the beginning. What was that like? Was it like a gush of water? I know that when it's on, you know, TV, it's like a waterfall, and it's rarely actually like that, right? So what was it like for you?
Yeah, you know, I think I didn't even know my water had broken when it broke. I'd read a lot about what it feels like. You know, all I was doing in those few weeks at the end was just reading different women's experiences. And I was like, what does it feel like to have your water break? And some people say it feels like you kind of wet your pants a little bit, and you're like, did I really pee, or did my water break? And there was one, it was the night before I actually went into full labor. So it was like a whole 24 hours or more before I would say I was in active labor that I think my water broke. And I was laying in bed, and I felt just like a little bit of like, oh, did I just pee a tiny, tiny bit? Like, that was weird. I mean, it was like barely, like it wasn't even enough to like change your underwear over. It was just like a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I just thought, well, I guess I just peed a little bit. Like, it really was so not a big deal. And then I started to have like a little bit of like what I thought was spotting. It was like kind of brownish discharge. Like, I knew to expect to have heavier discharge toward the end, and some blood, even like bloody show is what you're looking for, and like the mucus plug. And so it's like gelatinous, like it's like jelly comes out.
Is
it's like
just all at once and a big like plug, it just comes out?
Well, some people maybe, but I think mine was just like little bits at a time. It was just like a little jelly, you know, looking stuff.
What color was it?
It was like clear.
Oh, really? I would imagine it was like either snot colored
I know,
or kind of red or something.
But so it was kind of clear. Huh. And then I started to have like the brownish, and I thought that was spotting, but actually I think looking back, it was amniotic fluid, and there was meconium, which is poop. The baby poops, which means, you know, they're like overdue, I guess.
Yeah, that's more common with what quote unquote overdue babies, right? Because their body's starting to work as though it will work when they're born.
Right.
When they're still inside.
And it's really only a problem if the meconium gets like stuck in their lungs, like if they're somehow, it gets inside their airway, and then they come out and they start breathing, and it like blocks their airway and causes an infection or something.
Which generally doesn't happen if the baby's already in the right position when labor starts and when it poops, because it's head down at that point and its butt is up in the sky or up closer to your boobs. So the poop is unlikely going to come floating around and get in its mouth if it's in the right position and it's not shifting around inside of the fluid, right?
That's I'm not really sure how it works exactly, but I mean, it's not always a problem. And I know for my baby, it wasn't an issue, but they were ready to like suction out meconium if she did have a problem.
And the problem that's associated with that, if there is one, is perhaps she could have a lung infection if she'd breathed it. And they have a way to treat that immediately if that's a problem. So once they told you that, you felt a lot less worried. You felt better about it.
Like, I didn't know that my water had broken until I was actually at the birth center in like very active labor. And my midwife checked me to see how far dilated I was on my request. You know, they didn't really do any checks unless you really wanted it, because it's just kind of another chance to have an infection there, you know, to have some hands up in your bits. But, you know, I was, she said, oh, did your water hasn't broke yet? And I said, I don't think so. And she said, well, I think it has because there's meconium here. It's your water's already been broken. And then at that point, I realized I had actually had my water broken for maybe a day and a half day before we actually got to the birth center.
Which hospitals will often freak out about if you don't really start to go into active labor.
Immediately.
Yeah, like your water breaks, active labor, go. But clearly it doesn't need to happen straight away.
They give you 48 hours. The birth center, they'll give you 48 hours until they need to start induction, which is like required of them. Like I think they would wait another day.
Yeah.
Like up to 72 hours, but I think it's like required for them.
For liability reasons or something like that?
By 48 hours. So it's really not like a huge problem to have your water broken and then not go straight into labor.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I feel like generally the problem with understanding about birth and natural birth is usually in the media what you see is you see not a natural birth and you see everything happen in 20 seconds or you see a painful drawn out experience. You see no real actual middle ground.
Right.
And so,
it's interesting too because sometimes water doesn't break until you're pushing the baby's head out.
So it's
like
just so
you can
different.
Go through transition almost to the end of labor before the water breaks. And some babies are actually born in the amniotic sac. It's very rare, but they can be born in the amniotic sac.
And that's not a problem. That's just the way the body works that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes to show you how it's a different experience for every body, every baby, everything like that. And you can't try to make it, a streamlined thing. You can't try to make it. There's no standard, really. I mean, there's a range of normal and a range of healthy. And beyond that, you just have to shut the hell up and let it do what it's supposed to do and trust the body that's been, evolving for so long, hundreds of thousands of years to get here. I mean, it got here for a reason. Give it a chance to do its job. The job it was made for, actually. Give it a chance to actually succeed. So you talked about what it was like when your water broke. It seemed like maybe like a little bit of pee, and you didn't even know at first. When did you decide to go into the birth center? Like, how long had you been in labor? When did you realize, okay, here we go. It's time to go in.
Yeah, I think I started real active labor around, 5 or 6 in the evening. And I think it was around, 9 when things started to get pretty intense. And I had my husband call the midwife and tell her how far apart my contractions were and how long they were lasting. And we were timing all that. And I can't even remember what it is now, 5:11 or something like that, 5 minutes apart lasting a minute each or 2 minutes apart. Like, I don't remember what it was, somewhere in there. It's funny how much you forget.
Yeah.
but we were monitoring that and had those contractions going on for an hour of that and then we decided to go in, and it was around, I think, 11 o'clock when we got to the birth center. We left probably at 10 something. Got there around 11.
Because I got there about 30 minutes after that, I believe, and you had just gotten there.
Yeah, and my midwife checked me, and I was 5 centimeters dilated, I think. Four or five centimeters. And I guess, as she was checking me, I was like, I bet I'm this far dilated. And I was exactly that far dilated. And maybe she was just trying to humor me. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, that's how dilated you are. Keep believing that.
Yeah, but things got really intense, right after we got there. I felt like it was just perfect timing to get in there.
Yeah. When you said that in the beginning of the labor, it was relatively manageable and then once you got there and things got more intense, you really needed people to shut the hell up and leave, or you really needed not to be watched, and you needed your husband to touch you in certain spots and help massage you, and you needed to breathe through.
Right, even certain sounds were bothered. Like, my husband was eating crackers or something, and I was like, oh, God, leave the room now, because I don't want to hear that. I did feel a little nauseated a little during that time. I didn't throw up at all, but I was like, you can't eat in here, sorry.
That's the beginning of the fun time. So I showed up for that, and then I got to see, all of that phase of it.
And I got really hot. I was...
Yeah, the fan... Is the fan on? Is the air on? Everything was cut up to full blast.
My husband was wearing, a sweatshirt and sweatpants, and he was cold. And he was like, are you sure you need the fan on? And I was like, yes. I'm so hot. And I was, ready to strip my shirt off.
To do anyway at some point. So, yeah.
And I was like, I would pace. That was really the way I coped with it. In between contractions, I would just pace.
Moving was good.
Yes. And walking and rocking around and moving. And then I would have to bend over, usually on the bed or on the floor or somehow, when I'd have contractions.
Yeah, I remember that you said that it was, you know, you were feeling the contractions before you left, but once you got in the car and you had to be still, you said that that was the worst that the contractions were because you couldn't move. Moving was what saved the whole experience and what made it fantastic because you had mobility. Yeah. But being stuck in the car, you said that was the hardest time of all.
Well, you know, actually the car part, it wasn't so bad because it wasn't like super intense yet. It was like my contractions spread out when I was in the car, which was
I misremembered that then.
It slowed down, but it was like when they got more intense, I laid down on the bed for one contraction on my back and it was the worst. Like
without moving.
Yes. Oh, okay. Like I needed to be moving through them or like, I don't know. It was really strong. I just couldn't handle it like that. I did one like that. And then I was like, cause I got tired, you know, I was like, my legs were getting tired of like squatting or I just started to feel kind of exhausted. And I laid down cause I was like, I just need to lay down for this one. Like there's nothing else I can do. And I was like, oh God, this is not going to happen. I had to get back up again. And then I was ready to get in the tub. That was when I was like, okay, what else can I do to cope with this? Cause it, you know, I guess you could call it pain, but to me it wasn't really like, ow, ow, pain. It was more like, it was like doing like the hardest workout of your whole life. Like I used to run cross country in high school and I've always enjoyed like pushing my body to the limit and doing like sprint workouts and all this stuff. And to me, it was like this physical challenge of like being winded. Like I was having to breathe like heavily and like just trying to keep my body relaxed instead of tensing up. Like it was just this like major physical challenge. More than pain. Like when I think about pain, I think about like something being ripped or like punctured.
Or something or, like, that is not supposed to happen. Something unnatural that is harming you, which this wasn't harming you. This is natural.
Right. I mean, it was my body working. It was working really hard. That's why it's called labor. And that's something I never really realized until I watched like a documentary of a woman, you know, giving birth naturally. And it's like, she was working so hard and it was a labor. And that's why it's called labor. And it just made sense to me. And I was like, that's so obvious, you know, but we don't think about it like that so much in our culture. You know, it's like this thing that you go through and it's painful and you hate it. And then you have a baby, but it's like, it's part of the process, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, it didn't process in your mind as pain. It processed more as hard work and something to power through and to get through, like a challenge to accept and to succeed in kind of.
Right. And you don't have a choice, you know? It's like, this is happening. And the only thing you can really do is try to get in the right, like, frame of mind, get the most comfortable physical position you can, like, get support from the person that you're, you know, having as your birth partner, and just try to stay relaxed. And like, you know, reading about birth, like one of the biggest things that I kept reading was like, you need to relax like your mouth, like relax your mouth and think about like relaxing your vagina, you know, cause your baby's going to pass through. You need to just like relax in general and like stay open. Like you want to not like make noises that are like screaming. You want to make more like moaning, like lower,
looser noises and not like clenched up, squealy, high pitched sounds.
Yeah. And so as things got more intense, like my husband kept reminding me to like breathe, take deep breaths, like relax your shoulders. And it was hard to do that. Like I had to really try to just breathe and I'd like close my eyes, listen to my music and I was in the tub and, you know, I started to make noises. It just like happened. Like I wasn't expecting it really. It was kind of crazy, but I was trying to make more like low noises and like just let my body do it. Cause it was just doing it. And I was there along for the ride. You know, it was just like, just let it go. It's okay. You know, it was like an amazing experience. Like feel so like animal like that. It really made me feel like the whole like birth process and everything was, it just reminds you that you're an animal.
Yeah, which on the most basic level, that's what we are. And we try to rationalize it and make us very human, which we are. But we are on a most basic level animals with all these other cool things involved with us too.
Yeah.
So you were kind of starting to transition into talking about, the more active, intense, stage of labor. And we don't have any more time to talk about that today on the show today, but that's where we're going to pick up next time when, I interview Jen next time on the next installment of the interview series about, pregnancy, natural childbirth. I want to thank her for coming again and talking with us. Yay! Thank you so much, Janet.
It was fun.
That was really
You're
great.
Welcome.
And thank you, Hattie, who is now cozily napping on her mom. Thanks for coming and your input in the interview. I want to remind you once again to enter the O Woman contest and drawing. We're really coming up on the end of the first deadline, which is like the Facebook page, O Woman Podcast on Facebook, by midnight on Christmas Eve. And then of those people that have liked the Facebook page and on your honor, I'm going to trust you, have told someone else about the podcast too, shared it, shared a link, told a coworker, told a friend, told a family member since it's the holidays and you might be around them. Of those people at that point that have liked the page, they'll be entered into a drawing. I'll pull the winner's name out, on Christmas Day and make an announcement. Same thing with, the second installment of the contest, which will be the deadline for that is, same thing, like in the Facebook page, telling someone that's on New Year's Eve and the drawing will be on New Year's Day. And remember, each of those times you're entering to win a $15 gift card to Adam and Eve Adult Store Sex Shop, which would be a really great thing for you to start the new year off with something new. Fuzzy handcuffs, edible underwear, a vibrator, a book, any of those things. So make sure you do that. Make sure you like the Facebook page. Also check out the website. OWomanPodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening, guys. Can't wait to talk to you again tomorrow. All right, bye.